You're listening to Decoding the Code, the podcast for developers. Together with fantastic guest speakers, we explore coding myths, discover helpful tips for beginners and experts alike, and get a peek behind the digital curtains. Get ready for your host, Mark Backus.
Hello and welcome everyone to Decoding the Code. Today we are going to talk about learning how to code. And to do this, I have an amazing guest speaker, Quincy Larson, the founder of the Free Code Camp project. Together with him, we are going to look at some myths that turn around this topic of learning how to code. We're going to have some great tips for beginners, and we're going to get a look behind the scenes of Free Code Camp. I'm really excited to talk to you and bring some things or some knowledge you have to my audience. But before we come to the topic at hand, which is learning how to code or how to start learning how to code, I would like to talk a little bit about your own coding journey and the project you're famous for, which is Free Code Camp. So when did you start coding, more or less?
Yeah.
How long has it been?
So I started coding in, I think, 2012. I mean, maybe at the tail end of 2011, but I was 30 years old. And I had been working as a school director. So I didn't have any sort of programming background. I just wanted to make my school more efficient. All the teachers, I wanted them to be able to spend more time with the students and less time in the back office, entering information into spreadsheets and like filling out government forms and things like that. So I just started Googling around, and I found some basic tools that I could use to write some scripts to start automating some of that stuff. And at first it was just kind of a joke. I was like, how can I possibly do anything meaningful with no programming skills, you know? But I managed to do it, and the school was way more efficient. The teachers were happy. The students were happy. And it just started driving home to me, like, wow, just even a little bit of programming skills can dramatically change an organization. And so go ahead.
Yeah. What coding language were you using there?
So, I mean, I don't know if it's a proper language, but I used like AutoHotKey, which is like this Windows scripting language, essentially, literally like scripting, like, okay, click on this, then type this. And then, so I would automate like different government forms that I had to fill out a lot. And then it would just, I just sit down with like, you know, a spreadsheet, and it would kind of copy all the information from the spreadsheet and go through the process for all these different students. There was a little trial and error there, but it worked remarkably well, considering I was like giving it like mouse coordinates to move here and click here. Yeah. So it was extremely brittle, and it would only run on my machine, but it did work. I did get it to work. And that was like a revelation that you didn't need to be writing like this production code with like this huge test suite and everything to be able to get something done if you're not allergic to dirty hacks, which this certainly was. And you know, it just gave me that initial kind of sense of success that I think a lot of developers don't get when they first start learning. They get the error messages, they get the environment problems, like trying to get all their code to run properly and wiring everything together. They get the failing test messages, but they don't necessarily get the encouragement of like building something that people are actually using, that's actually having a demonstrable impact in the organization. And that's what I was able to get, which was addictive.
Okay. Yeah. Because nowadays it's there's a lot of pressure on people that want to learn coding nowadays. It's like, you have to learn, if you want to go into web development, you have to learn JavaScript and CSS and HTML. And then you have to learn one of the frameworks and some backend and some, it must be overwhelming for newcomers to get into, especially web development. Yeah, but let's talk a little bit about the project you're most famous for, Free Code Camp. For the audience that doesn't know it yet, can you explain real quick what Free Code Camp is?
Sure. Free Code Camp is a global community of people who are helping one another learn to code. And the way that we do this is we have a free comprehensive curriculum that focuses primarily on web development, but it does get into some machine learning and data science and stuff like that, scientific computing. And then we also have a forum where you can ask other people for help if you get stuck while you're programming. And we have a chat room system, which we just launched, like an official free code camp chat room, which even has like a native app that you can download and you can use. You can chat on your phone and stuff. And that is available in three major world languages right now, English, Spanish, and Chinese. And then we also have the publication, which we publish more than 8,000 tutorials there, like text-based tutorials. And then we have the YouTube channel where we publish full-length courses that are kind of like what you'd get, I guess, if you were to go to like a MOOC platform like Coursera or edX or Udacity, like just the video portion and then a lot of programming things that you can, like you can go clone the code base and or pull down the data set and you can build along at home. So that's really, I think I mentioned five main things. The curriculum, the forum, the YouTube channel, the chat room system, and the what was the last one? The tutorials.
Oh, and the you said the curriculum. I think that's what most people like desperately need, like the step-by-step. Okay, you can start here, and then you go from here to there. Because when you get there, like there are like a million things you have to learn. So I think that's one of the things that I like most about Free Code Camp when I checked it out. That it gives people a path to go through without like being like, oh yeah, maybe this, maybe that. Is like, yeah, we start with the basics and then maybe get a little bit more specific. That's what I like most about it.
And that's a concerted decision, I guess, on my part, because I mean, even though it's a huge community of contributors, I guess I do a lot of the like big design and pedagogical considerations. Like, for example, we don't have any electives. The entire Free Code Camp is a single linear curriculum. And you can enter at any point and you can exit at any point. People get jobs when they're just, one or two certifications in, they'll go get a job. Maybe they'll come back and continue to expand their skills after they've gotten their bearings at their new job. And people come in, maybe they've already done web development and they just want to earn the certifications. They can go and just build the certification projects. Everything other than the certification projects, completely optional. You can claim the certification. Just some context as to the efficacy of this curriculum. We've had more than 40,000 people that we know of from our LinkedIn alumni network get jobs as developers who weren't working as developers before. They transitioned into software development. So it does work. It's a proven path. It's just, it's hard. It takes a lot of work. There's no magic.
Again, about Free Code Camp, when did the product start to develop? Like, how did it all start and when?
Yeah, so I started Free Code Camp in, I think, October of 2014. I just sat down in my closet. I was in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I've just been doing lots of hackathons, and I've worked as a software engineer for a while, and I've also done some freelance projects and things like that for clients. And really, for the past few years, while I've been doing all that, I've been working on different iterations, different attempts at creating like a learning tool of some sort, specifically technology education. So I just come off of this giant ambitious project that didn't get any users. Nobody cared about it, even though I'd spent like 2 years coding this big recommendation engine and building this giant database of like millions of job postings and thousands of courses and just mining through all this stuff. I mean, it was great. I learned a ton, but none of the code got used for anything. Nobody ever used that. I think we got like 400 registered users total. And I don't think any of them really seriously like stuck with it. They just checked it out and then left probably. So I was really tempted to just go get a job. I had a few companies that were offering me jobs and I thought, well, maybe there's something, maybe I can just take one more try. Maybe I just bit off more than I could chew. Maybe I could make something way simpler. And so Free Code Camp was that. It was way simpler than any of the projects I'd ever attempted. It was just, a single linear curriculum that walked people through a whole lot of basics, basic web development. We focused almost exclusively on JavaScript development at that time. And That was the one that got some initial traction and, of course, has grown over the past 6 years to be a community of lots of people. Just to give you some idea of how many people use FreeCodeCamp, we get about 500,000 people who use it every day on FreeCodeCamp.org.
Well, I thought like around 100,000, but I was way off. That's impressive.
Yeah, thank you. It's taken a lot of work to get here, and yeah. I still don't really believe it. Like until I go in and look at the server logs, and I'm like, yeah, CloudFlare says we have 500,000 people today, you know. And then I start to like, you know, it ebbs and flows, but it's around 500,000 a day. And then we also have the YouTube channel, which is grown quite a bit. So if you combine like FreeCodeCamp.org and the YouTube channel, people spent in 2020. People spent the equivalent of about 2,500 years or about 1.3 billion minutes using FreeCodeCamp, which means, like, as you and I are talking, there are about 2,500 people using FreeCodeCamp.
Let's start talking a little bit like how to start like coding, like not as much like where you start. Now we know where you could start. You could start with FreeCodeCamp. It's free and it has all the curriculum. It's a proven path. But what would you say is a non-technical skill someone would need for coding or more non-technical skills someone needs for coding?
Reading comprehension. The ability to like slowly read something very carefully and understand what it's saying. I mean, if you're looking at technical documentation, if you're trying to read like an error message and follow a stack trace, just being very patient and reading very clearly. And I mean, it's kind of a communication problem. You're trying to communicate to the computer what you want the computer to do. The computer is trying to communicate to you what it needs from you to the extent it can. Computers are not anywhere near as smart, I guess, by traditional metrics as like a human being. So we really have to you know, put one foot in front of the other for the computer so they can figure out what to do. And so communication skills is, you know, and I have like a liberal arts background. Like I got an English degree. And I never would have thought that like my time spent like writing, you know, papers and doing things like that would be so useful to ultimately programming. But essentially I was just trying to communicate things to, you know, an academic team. And now I'm trying to communicate things to servers.
Now we talked about the non-technical skills, communication, patience, reading, patience, reading, and like also very technical and sometimes boring things. But are there any technical skills you would say that you need those before starting to code, or is it completely everyone can start on this path?
I mean, I think that knowing how to use like a mouse and a keyboard and stuff like that, which we shouldn't take for granted. There are people who've grown up with those things. Many people now are growing up with just a smartphone, and as a result, they may not actually be able to type that quickly. Knowing how to use like a basic file system. I mean, with FreeCodeCamp, we do everything in the browser, so you don't really need to know that much about a computer, but it certainly helps. I think the main thing is just critical thinking skills. You don't need a lot of mathematics. You can learn that later when you need it. I think people probably overestimate how much you actually need in order to just sit down and create a basic web app, for example. Like, you know, starting with FreeCodeCamp, we start with just HTML and CSS. And the first certification is just doing like accessibility and responsive design and things like that using HTML and CSS. And then we incorporate JavaScript later just to give people that. The reason, of course, being that like it's very visual and there's a tight feedback loop. Like you can change the color of something and, oh, it just changed over here. Whereas like, you know, it's more abstract to work with like, you know, an algorithm, for example, and change the way you traverse like an array or something like that. Like it's not as immediately clear. And there are fewer, I guess, real world metaphors that people are likely to understand as just like a typical human being that's come to this from just any given world culture. So we definitely focus on things that are visual first, and then we move from there.
Do you think there is like a specific maybe mindset someone should in the best case have in order to learn programming, because it, as you mentioned earlier, it can be a frustrating process?
Absolutely, it's hard, and that's one thing I want to make sure everybody knows is like, if you're having trouble learning to program, it's not just you. Everybody experiences some degree of frustration and you know, ambiguity, like grappling with ambiguity while they're trying to learn to code, because it's challenging. And you'll often meet developers who are like, oh, programming isn't that hard. It came really natural to me. What most likely happened is they started programming at a younger age and they've just kind of forgotten a lot of the struggle they went through. Yeah. I mean, it is a struggle. Like a lot of people like hold up, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, for example, like, oh, he's a programming genius. But they don't necessarily know that he was also very wealthy and his parents paid for him to have like private programming tutors throughout high school. And of course, you know, paid for him to attend Harvard. And, you know, he's got an incredible amount of privilege. And most of us growing up in, like me growing up in the US and you growing up in Luxembourg, you probably had access to a lot of resources that somebody, you know, growing up in other parts of Europe or Asia or Africa or Latin America wouldn't necessarily have access to all those resources. Like I got a computer when I was only, I think like 13 or 14. I got a Windows compatible like x86 computer. And I was able to at least get familiar with like Windows and stuff, even though I just used it for games. I didn't actually program. But still, I mean, that is an advantage. And just there's something to be said for just having grown up with computers and not being intimidated by them. When you are 30 years old and you're encountering a computer for the first time at like a library or something like that, that can be a very intimidating experience, I imagine. So, just instead of thinking about like whether you're able to program, just think about programming as like a certain amount of time that you put in to get good with working with technology, essentially getting computers to do your bidding, and how many thousands of hours have you put in. and the more thousands of hours that you productively put in, like actually doing, you know, meaningful new things on a computer other than just, you know, going about your routine, probably the better you're going to be at picking things up. You're going to have more practice and your mind's going to just have a lot of the associations, the kind of hat racks that you can hang hats on, so to speak, in your mind.
Yeah, I remember my first contact with the computer. It was an old computer that my dad brought from work with Windows 3.11 on it. And I don't know what I did. I broke it. It didn't start anymore afterwards. And that was my first like hit in the gut by technology. Okay, and what do you think about the importance of learning the basics and get a very good foundation of the basics before jumping into more complex things? Like taking the example of learning a solid JavaScript instead of like jumping into React or Vue or Angular. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's definitely worth slowing down and mastering the fundamentals before moving on to more advanced topics. One thing that I would say is that if you do skip JavaScript and you just jump straight to React, for example, like a lot of people, for example, when I was learning, they just say, oh, you don't need to learn JavaScript. Just grab jQuery and use those jQuery functions and that'll be good enough. And as a result, I think there were many, many developers out there who knew like a backend language like Ruby for like Ruby on Rails or Python for Django. But they didn't actually know how to use JavaScript properly. So a lot of hacky fixes ensued. So I would say it definitely is worth it to learn the fundamentals. And if you look at the free CodeCamp curriculum and you kind of scroll through it, you're going to see that we focus heavily on fundamental tools. We don't really care as much about libraries and things like that, because if you really learn the fundamentals, you can easily pick up libraries and things like that just by reading the documentation. Or we have secondary, you know, supplementary courses on different tools. But one of the things we're hoping to do with this new expansion to our curriculum, which I don't think I've mentioned yet, but we're expanding the curriculum to have like an entire series of data science related certifications that teach math. So we're going to teach, for example, we're going to assume that you haven't had math since high school. So we're going to teach algebra and geometry, and then we're going to teach calculus, statistics, linear algebra, matrix algebra.
Nice.
And then we can get into the data analysis, data engineering, and ultimately machine learning. So I think all those are fundamental, and we're going to focus on fundamental tools rather than, you know, chasing the latest, greatest, you know, ML library.
Yeah. Well, yeah, nice. That's almost like creating a whole online school when you talk about linear algebra and geometrics and so on. So
yeah, and FreeCodeCamp, you know, eventually we'll cover a lot more topics like that. Our goal is to make it so that people who don't have a computer science degree don't have to go back and get a computer science degree if they're already working and stuff. My thinking is you should never have to go back to university. Even if you never finish university and you just have been working for a while, mm-hmm. I think it's university isn't designed to go back to it. They've kind of tried to pretend it is through, you know, night school and things like that over the past few decades, but it really was conceived as like a one-off kind of period of people's lives. And I'm not saying like you should drop out of your university program if you're like in a correspondence course or something like that, but we want to make it so future people don't have to even like consider that as an option. They can just, you know, if they didn't go to university out of high school, they can just pick up what they need from FreeCodeCamp and be able to go out and get a good job using that or progress within their current career and get increasingly technical to get more and more advanced roles within their company.
Okay, nice. Okay, now before we come to the myths, I want to talk to you about one by one. What is the most single important advice you would give someone that starts out learning how to code? They don't know, they maybe know about computers, but they know nothing else about coding. What would be the single best advice you could give them?
Yeah, pace yourself. It's a marathon, not a sprint. It's so much more useful for you to just study like 30 minutes a day and do it every single day without fail. If you do like 100 days of code or something like that, to where you're coding a little each day, because a lot of learning involves learning something and then going and doing something else and going to sleep, waking up, and your brain processes it. And those kind of pathways get etched in and the relations get made within your mind while you're sleeping and while you're doing other things. So I think if somebody said, hey, I can do, you know, 300 hours of coding, let's say 360 hours of coding in like 2 weeks, and I can really quickly become a developer that way, maybe I would say, well, why don't you just do 1 hour a day for a year? And that's the same amount of time spent in front of the keyboard, but you're going to get way more mileage out of that.
Yeah.
Just by taking your time. And I strongly encourage people, like, planning is so valuable. If you can just plan your career like 5 years out, if you can just say like, I think from five years from now, I'd like to be working as a full stack developer at, a medium sized startup, for example, or like a large enterprise software company or something like that, right? Like whatever your goal is, and your goal can change. But if you're just sitting down and practicing programming a certain number of hours a day, then you can be making strides toward that goal, even while you continue to work your job or go to school or doing whatever it is you're doing, so that you can pay for your, pay for your family, pay for your parents if you're supporting your parents, and just be able to sustain yourself. The biggest mistake I see people making is quitting their job or quitting school and just saying, I'm just going to learn to program now. And then invariably they run out of money and they have to go out and maybe they get lucky and they do get a job. This happens for some people, but for most people, I think what's more likely is they're going to have to go back to their old industry, or they're just going to have to take like a kind of a makeshift job working at like a convenience store or something like that while they can focus on continuing their education. So if I had one piece of advice to people who are thinking about learning the code, it would be take your time. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
So what I do in this, or what I want to do in this show is I always get a myth about the topic at hand. And I always ask the person that I'm interviewing, what do you think about this myth? Is it debunked, or is it, does it have its, how do you say, its reason to be there? So would you be okay if I would just go through some of them and
you
give me your opinion on it?
Yeah, just rapid fire. Sure. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm very opinionated. All
right. Yes. All right. So now we get to the myths, or myth, difficult word. Okay. You ready, Quincy?
I am.
Okay, the myth. You need to be good at math to learn code, how to code.
You don't need to be good at math to learn to code. It helps to be good at math for doing a lot of advanced software engineering and other tasks. And that's one of the reasons Free Code Camp is going to have a very robust math curriculum. But it's going to happen very late in the curriculum because you can, like full stack web development generally, you don't necessarily need math. But by the time you start getting into, data analysis and definitely machine learning, you want to know linear algebra. You want to know statistics, of course, like the back of your hand. So it's important, but you don't need it to start.
All right. I need to be a master of data science structures and algorithms, bubble sort, quick sort, trees, graphs, and so on, in order to get to learn how to code.
Again, it helps. I view algorithms and data structures as just an opportunity to get more practice programming. It doesn't hurt to be exposed to lots of different sorting algorithms. For example, we use a lot of those in the Free Code Camp curriculum, and they do come up in job interviews, so it's good to know them. But yeah. I think in practice, if you really needed to know them, you could just look them up.
Okay. I think this is an easy one. I need to learn all the languages and technologies. Common myth.
I think you should get really good at one language first. I am maybe the most, one of the more vocal people who says that JavaScript is the best first language. And a lot of people are like, well, why not Python? And I learned Python first. But I think that JavaScript is uniquely useful because you can build something and easily share it. If you try to share something in Python, it's a little harder. Like, okay, let me clone your Jupyter notebook and run all this. Like JavaScript, boom. Hey, check out my web app. You know, it's like everybody knows how to click on a link and show up on your web app. And it's, you can just throw things up on CodePen or, Code Sandbox, wherever. Put it on your own website, put it up on GitHub pages, wherever. Suddenly people are able to interact with what you built. And that is so important to your sense of momentum as a developer and your just getting feedback and feeling like you're actually building something, as opposed to, like, in Chinese, we have this, my wife is Chinese and I spent like 6 years in China. So if I say we, I'm not trying to say I'm Chinese or anything like that. I'm an American. But in Chinese, there's an expression, bi men zao che, which means close the doors and build the chariot. Like, if you build a chariot behind closed doors, you have no idea how it's going to drive out on the real road with potholes how it's going to take turns, all that stuff, right? Like, you need to be taking the chariot out of the garage and rolling it around to see how it interacts. And that's very much why I recommend starting with JavaScript, just because it's so easy. Within minutes of coding a quick and simple JavaScript app, you can have it live and you can tweet it out or share it somewhere with your friends and get feedback.
Okay. Yeah, definitely that. I think we answered already this one. Coding is easy.
No.
Coding is not easy, but the counterpart, coding is for the very smart people only.
I think coding is not nearly as hard as a lot of other activities. Like, if you look at like traditional STEM activities, like if you're doing like, biochemistry, if you're doing like advanced physics, that's probably going to be way harder than just using a scripting language to build a basic script. Maybe building Google 2 billion lines of code, last time I checked, that probably is very hard, and that will probably take many, many lifetimes. It probably just even productively contributing to Google's code base takes a whole lot of work. But I don't think that coding is the hardest thing to do, or maybe even in up there. I think it's getting easier all the time as we get more and more powerful tools, as we're working at higher levels of abstraction. So I think it's hard, but it's not something that's beyond the grasp of regular mortals like myself.
All right. I think you also answered before. I need a computer science degree in order to become a programmer.
It helps. And if you're going to go to university, definitely get a computer science degree. It's by far the highest compensating degree you can get in the US anyway. And it's also an extremely flexible degree that'll give you exposure to a lot of math, computer science, programming, and other skills that you can potentially apply, just general technological system know-how. I would definitely recommend computer science over any other major that you could possibly get in the United States. And I would recommend it strongly above getting like a software engineering or computer engineering or electrical engineering. Like computer science is much more flexible, and it's what most employers look for when they're like checking boxes. Like, oh, he's a CS grad. Okay, we don't need to worry about his programming skills, for example. That, if I were to apply somebody now, they might say, oh, he doesn't have a CS degree, huh? We're going to have to put him in the maybe file.
You know, yeah.
Or the circular file right next to the desk, right? More likely. But that could be overcome. You don't have to have a CS degree. And increasingly, companies are coming out and publicly saying that they don't, that they're going to look at other things beyond just a CS degree.
Okay. And the last one, learning to code is expensive with all the monitors and laptops and MacBooks and mechanical keyboards.
Yeah. I mean, it can be as expensive as you want. You can take any hobby and make it expensive, right?
Yeah.
You can make drinking water expensive if you want to.
Good one.
Yeah. There's like this this guy, I don't remember his name, but he's like a professional gamer and he also, or streamer, and he also like made this video where he's like becoming a water aficionado or whatever. And he talks about like the degree of like how he filters his water and all. It's absurd, but it's a mockery of people who get really into things that are simple. It doesn't have to be complicated, right? You don't have to get a mechanical keyboard. A lot of people swear by mechanical keyboards. I don't really use one. I just use like a stock laptop. I do have a mechanical keyboard for my gaming PC, but I don't have much time to game, so I don't spend much time on that. Yeah, the main thing you need is a computer for maybe like the last 10 years. They can run Chrome reasonably well, and you're probably good to go. If you have a Linux system or a Unix-based system like Mac OS, then you can easily get in and use the standard command line commands. Although now with Windows, you can do that too. They've got a Linux running inside of Windows, so you can use the bash commands and everything. So it doesn't need to be expensive. And as far as like learning in terms of paying for stuff, there are some great courses out there that if you want to pay for them, go for it. FreeCodeCamp is always going to be a free kind of like resource of last resort. Assuming you don't have any money, you can use FreeCodeCamp. FreeCodeCamp can be used in conjunction with lots of paid resources too, if you want to.
All right. Yes. That was it for the myths. And I just want to ask something that I like to ask people that come on the show. Can you tell me something about yourself that not that many people know? Something interesting or fun?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I dropped out of high school when I was a sophomore, and I just like lived in my car for a while and worked at Taco Bell. And so many people may be like in a similar situation. Maybe they didn't drop out of high school, but maybe they got laid off during the pandemic and they don't have very many skills or something like that. And, 21 years ago, I guess I'm 40 now, and all that stuff, 20, 22, 23, 24 years ago. Whenever that happened, it seemed pretty bleak. And I never would have imagined that I could even learn to program. Wouldn't imagine that I could learn Chinese and, live abroad for like 6 years and work as a translator and all that stuff. I wouldn't have imagined that I could run a school. All it takes is a few years of hard work and creativity. And different people have different circumstances. But all it took for me as a white male living in America, the middle-class background, and the ability to go to an inexpensive state university was just a lot of hard work. So I think that you can surmount the obstacles if you're patient and if you plan and if you take things kind of one step at a time. And if you don't ever let yourself feel satisfied that, I've arrived. There were so many times in my life where I was like, maybe this is good enough. Maybe I can just stay here. Maybe I can just keep working at Taco Bell. And then of course with the pandemic, like I'm almost certain that I would have either contracted COVID or gotten laid off from my job if I just stayed at Taco Bell. And or working as a school director, like the school that I worked at shut down after I left to go become a programmer, and everybody thought that was such a stable job, but it wasn't. It couldn't resist COVID, you know. Keep moving forward. keep reacquiring new targets after you've accomplished your goal. You want to make sure you accomplish the goal before you start looking around for what next to do, unless you really do want to bail on the goal if you decide that it wasn't the right goal or something. But just be patient. I think that's the biggest advice I have for people is being patient and thinking long-term and planning ahead. And you can do great things just with a little bit of planning, because the reality is most people don't plan very far out at all. And, you know, even somebody who I wouldn't consider myself particularly smart or particularly charismatic or capable or anything like that. But I did spend a lot of time thinking very hard and planning what I wanted to do next. And I think that is something anybody can do. Anybody can plan. Anybody can look at their circumstances, look at the opportunities that are in front of them, look at their, you know, privileges and all that stuff, figure out how to make the best of whatever they have with a little bit of planning.
All right. I think that's a very nice note to end this episode. Thank you again, Quincy, for your time, of course, and all your wisdom you imparted upon us.
Thank you for listening to Decoding the Code. A new episode will be available every week, so don't forget to tune in next Monday. For past episodes, check out the website decoding.show.